TFM.
Welcome back, everyone, to Saddle Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I really enjoyed that game of chess we just finished, and I have to congratulate you on your win. So if you could please eat the queen now, we can wrap this up.
I'm sorry, Chris, why are we playing chess when that, you know, wormhole is shrinking and we have very little time, but we're wasting time on a chess game? I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, we need something to do as we spiral to our death.
I guess, you know. Don't worry, MacGyver Ortegas is on the mission. We'll be fine. We'll be fine.
We will be fine. We're definitely going to get out of here.
Yeah, of course.
Especially if there's a giant warehouse fan and a big sheet somewhere we can fly away. It's one of my greatest memories of watching MacGyver was him flying across the desert with a sheet and a warehouse fan.
I mean, it sounds like a classic. It sounds like a better episode than this. So
it was a classic. It's an absolute classic. Well, everyone, we're going to talk about potentially another classic today as we continue through Strange New World Season 3 with the 9th episode of the season. It's Terrarium. And here's a quick rundown of the story. While investigating a peculiar area of uncharted space, a region legendary for strange phenomena, the Enterprise finds it impossible to get proper readings from probes due to highly volatile gravimetric waves. Ortegas flies a shuttle into the turmoil to gather data firsthand. But when a wormhole suddenly opens up and sends the shuttle tumbling into a moon orbiting a gas giant, Ortegas must fight to survive. She has to find shelter, food, and water, but there's one obstacle she wasn't counting on, the Gorn. With the clock ticking before the moon passes through the planet's thermosphere, the two enemies find common ground. When the Enterprise finally arrives to rescue them, it is revealed that the whole situation was just a test staged by the Metrons. So, Matthew, we've got
breaking in. This is a test of the emergency Metron system. This is only a test.
Well, it's only the first of many tests.
Apparently,
to come,
yes, many tests.
Apparently,
to come. Yes.
So, Matthew, we've got a very familiar story here. The first couple of minutes, I was thinking, is this Dawn from Enterprise? That's the first episode that came to mind for me. But of course, it's not the first time that Star Trek did their riff on the film Hell in the Pacific or the novella-turned-film Enemy Mine. I think probably The Enemy from The Next Generation is one of the earliest ones that I can think of with Geordi and the Romulan. But, you know, they've done this
right and quite, then Darmok
quite a few times.
It's very similar.
Yeah, Darmok, you know. Obviously. Yeah. Even Waltz, to some extent, is a bit like this on DS9. You've also got it on Voyager. So there's no new ground being charted here at all. But let's talk about how the premise of this story works or doesn't, if you think it doesn't, for Ortegas's character development. Because even though it is a familiar story, at least I can definitely see why they're playing this card here. To talk about Ortegas feeling like maybe she can be fixed. And then later there's the comment about the Gorn feeling like it's too broken to be saved.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is an episode that is so blatant in its thematic elements that there's absolutely no subtlety to it. And in that, I think, is one of its detriments. On top of being so familiar as a trope, as the way Star Trek has utilized this before, I applaud them for wanting to do this with Ortegas and kind of get to the core and help her overcome this thing with the Gorn. And it's very Star Trek of a right to start to see an enemy as a friend.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's great. It's just here, it's incredibly boring as an episode. And because there's nothing new or innovative about the type of story they're trying to tell, everything in this episode just feels like it comes way too easy for Ortegas. It's way too easy for her to accept the Gorn. It's way too easy for them to become friends. It's way too easy for them to start communicating in a way that makes more sense than grunts and growls. Like, every single thing about this episode, there's no true struggle that happens to it. I mean, when you think of Dawn, that episode, yes, felt familiar, but everything about that, I mean, they're literally about to die before they're rescued. Like, they're both dying of thirst, you know? It's like, there's just, and you mentioned Geordi and the Romulan. I mean, it's literally the same story, too. And it's just, I get wanting to help Ortegas overcome this this fear that she has of the Gorn, to be able to see them in a different light. But I would have much rather them really labored on trying to make the story original instead of just giving us something that we've seen before. And yeah, to me, I don't know if you agree or not. I'd love to know what you think, because to me, just again, everything about the episode, yes, it, we're supposed to get this foreboding sense, right? But the whole episode also plays its hand in helping us know that this isn't an accident about them being there in the first place. Even with just the way the planet is going to go through a gas giant, and yet there's somehow still atmosphere on this moon, makes zero sense scientifically.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, but
okay, if you're, Chris, just think about this. If you're going through a gas giant, a moon is passing through that, how in the world does it sustain in any way, shape, or form a oxygen-nitrogen atmosphere? How would that even be possible?
I don't know about the... Well, in this story, maybe the Metrons created the atmosphere, so there's some prequel, but...
I get that part. Obviously, the Metrons are the ones who are in charge of this whole thing, and, course, they're making this possible. But I'm just saying, like...
Well, the oxygen, nitrogen, well, having an atmosphere, a moon orbiting a gas giant, having an atmosphere, I mean, we have, there are planets in our own solar system orbiting Jupiter and Saturn
that
have atmospheres.
They don't actually move through Jupiter itself.
Right, but that, well, okay, so, yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
If it goes through the thermosphere, how would it regain its atmosphere is what you're saying. Because right now, when they're there, it's not passing through yet. It's going to pass through. So they could be okay right now. But if it passes through one time, then you might think, well, the atmosphere will burn off. So when it comes back around for its next orbit, it wouldn't have an atmosphere. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm saying that everything about the episode plays its hand way too early, that this is a setup, that none of this is really real in a lot of ways. And so again, that is where I'm kind of jumping on the writing and saying this episode needed to be reworked at least three more times. And honestly, it just needed to go back to the drawing board completely and say, okay, what we want by the end of this episode is Ortegas to get through her anger with the Gorn and be able to come out the other side completely different.
Yeah.
But we've got to do it in a way that Star Trek fans haven't seen at least four times before.
Well, that would have been nice if they had done something where it wasn't so familiar. Because, so the thing for me with the episode is that overall I enjoyed the episode and I was really glad to see that they were doing something for Ortegas's character. They were actually addressing a situation that they had created earlier in the season. And also they were giving Ortegas her moment, right? It wasn't an episode where there was something going on for her, but there's all this other stuff happening as well. It's really, in the tradition of Star Trek, it's very much focused on one character, which I thought was great.
Yeah, it's mostly an A story.
Yeah, right. About the atmosphere thing, though, another possibility is that this moon normally has a normal orbit around this planet, and the Metrons have changed the trajectory of the orbit to create the situation for her,
right.
Which would be the reason why it still has an atmosphere, because it doesn't normally pass through the thermosphere.
Right.
There are things like that you could think of.
Again, I'm not arguing that the Metrons aren't involved in this. What I'm arguing is that it is crystal clear the Metrons or some sort of something has to be involved way too early in the story because the moment you find out that this planet passes through a gas giant, well, it's like there's no way for there to actually be atmosphere on this planet at all.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the normal trajectory of this planet,
this wouldn't
make any sense. And so you're again kind of tipping the hand that, okay, there's something weird going on here. I mean, the first time I watched this, I was like, that makes zero sense.
Well, there are other clues in the episode too. Well, first of all, the wormhole opening up suddenly.
Yes,
that's
that
weird.
Too, yeah.
But once she's there, so she crashes, but she survives. I mean, that can happen, but also that was a lucky chance. Then later on, the shuttle disappears. There's like a sinkhole or something. The shuttle is gone. She also makes comments about noticing lights, you know, what's going on with these lights.
Right.
The battery explosion, you know, there are many, many clues all the way through that something odd is happening. This isn't just simply crashed on a moon, right?
Right.
The fact that the Gorn was already there, but was still alive also.
Right.
Is another element of that. But even though all that stuff is there, I guess the key here... and like we just said, it would have been nice if they had found a way to do it where it had a bit more originality and it wasn't so much a rehash of past Star Trek episodes that have sought to do the same thing with the same scenarios. But in the end, I think everything comes easy to her because the whole point of the story is just for her to come face to face with the Gorn in the aftermath of what happened to her and just finding common ground. And I guess what's interesting to me when I think about it is that I was so happy to see them do a situation and do a story that felt a lot truer to Star Trek because, you know, putting one of our heroes and putting one of the enemies together, it's very Star Trek, coming together, learning to understand each other, very Star Trek. Even them sitting around the table on the Enterprise trying to figure out solutions to what to do, it felt very much like an episode of The Next Generation, right?
It does. Yeah.
So I was so happy amid all the other stuff that we've been getting, I was so happy to see them do that type of episode that I think they were able to pull me along through it and actually enjoyed watching it up until the moment the Metron appeared. And even before the Metron appeared, I'm sitting here with my wife on the sofa. She has no idea who the Metrons are, anything about Arena or anything like that. But as soon as even a moment before the transporter beams froze, I go, it's the Metrons?
you know,
it's like I knew, it's so obvious what they're doing there. So we can talk about the Metrons a little bit later on. Right now, let's just stick with Ortegas' story.
You know, the thing that is interesting... because what's fascinating is your response to this episode was my response to the last episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was and the reasons are exactly the same. The reason we responded the way we did to these separate episodes was because it was character driven. It was about the characters, which I agree with you in this. That is the main strength here is that we're actually dealing with characters. Although I will get into a huge complaint I have later on about some character stuff that makes zero sense in this, but. I think the reason that this one doesn't work for me and the last one did is they actually did something unique last week it's a crazy off the wall idea, but I mean, it's Star Trek. So, you know, the fact that we could just, you know, turn people into Vulcans. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then allow us to explore that again. Okay. And giving us a Vulcan who his family is, you know, really interested in humanity and all that kind of, I mean,
in love with humans.
Exactly. Doug, you know, and so
I could just see his bedroom on Vulcan. He's probably got, like, as a kid growing up, he's got, like, posters of humans all over mm-hmm. the walls.
Yeah, he's got, like, Kirk posters on his wall. Not yeah. Kirk posters, but, I mean, he's got, like, Archer posters on his wall, posters. You know? He's got a picture of T'Pol and Trip together, you know? It's like...
The dream.
Exactly, that's his dream. That's, you know, that's why he ends up with number one, even though she's an Illyrian. So, But what I'm saying that is that I don't respond to this episode because I think there's a lot of really just kind of there's writing in this episode that doesn't feel challenging or interesting or and because of that, the episode and what we're doing with Artagas actually isn't very interesting because it's like, okay, mm-hmm. yeah, we're going to make her, you know, come. She's going to be fine after whatever. And so everything about the thought process behind this did not feel as well thought out or even in studied or in the sense of like, okay, how do we challenge our conceptions of what it means for Spock to be Vulcan and a half Vulcan mm-hmm. at that mm-hmm. and on our non-Vulcan friends to actually understand what it means to be Vulcan. You know, they literally get to walk in his shoes. But here, we're just not being creative enough in trying to figure out, okay, how do we get Artagas from one place to the next in a way that's going to be truly compelling? Because mm-hmm. everything about this episode from the beginning as a Star Trek fan is boring. I can call everything that's going to happen. There's nothing, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and therefore that makes for a wasted episode. Yes, a character might move by the end of it, but if the story is not interesting or captivating as you watch that character make that major transition, well, who cares? Because that's the whole point of storytelling is that I really want to be a part of that character's change. And this is just not challenging. Again, compared to last episode where all of those characters came away with an understanding of Spock and his predicament as a character and understanding him better and appreciating him more in a way that, while ridiculous and silly in their issues with that episode we talked about ad nauseum last time, it was still a more interesting experience watching it. And even rewatching it, whereas I've seen this episode twice, and if I never see this episode again, I'll be totally fine because it's just I don't need to see it again. There's nothing in it, even character wise, that is important enough to watch it again, unless I'm going to show my wife this series at some point.
Well, talking about seeking understanding, which again is really the core of the whole point of the story. But it does go both ways. Like, we get the Gorn starting to understand humans a little bit more. It was interesting that the Gorn apparently understands English because she wants to understand the enemy, not to study them as prey.
Right.
It was kind of a, I don't know for sure if they did it on purpose, but it certainly seemed like a cute nod to Pike in the menagerie when he has the chair with the flashing lights of yes or no, and that's the only way he can communicate back, because here the Gorn can only say agree or disagree, even though she can understand everything that Artagas is saying. So that was like a little bit of a inside Pike anyway. Strange New Worlds characters and past story for that. But the thing about the Gorn for me is that, and this is the issue that I have with this episode, is that it feels like someone finally showed the writers Arena and they said, oh, that's what the Gorn are supposed to be like. And now they're trying to figure out how to make it all connect together, because the Gorn that we see here, this female Gorn pilot who's stuck on the moon with Artagas,
right?
Like, the behavior of this Gorn doesn't align with anything we've seen from any Gorn, including adult Gorn, in Strange New Worlds. Yeah. So, like, I can try to reconcile that by saying, well, this Gorn's very injured and it's very scared and it thinks it's going to die and it's broken and it's just happy to have this companionship of another living being. But that also doesn't make sense for the Gorn as they've been portrayed up to this point. So if we were able to see some sort of evolution of Gorn behavior in the series leading up to this encounter, it would help that work a little bit better. And, you know, that's a case where I don't think that the Metrons staging the test has anything to do with the behavior of the Gorn that we see, because if it did, then it would be, you know, tainting the test in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, you make an incredibly salient point as to why this episode doesn't work on another front. It's not consistent within the series that it's being written. And I think that's, you know, as we've talked through Strange New Worlds, one of the issues that season three especially, and even season two ran into a little bit, is its inability to be consistent within itself. And, you know, we talked about Star Trek Picard, right? And that was also a show that could not figure out how to be consistent within itself. And part of that was, you know, the change in showrunners, right? That did not help that at all and was not really consistent until a season three where, you know, it's universally praised and loved by fans and everybody else alike. And so, but this series as well, especially this season, cannot figure out any kind of consistency in itself. And it's such a strange thing that it's like we've just had Gorn episodes this season. And all you would need to do as a Strange New Worlds writer is watch your Gorn episodes and be like, oh, that's our portrayal of the Gorn. Okay. Well, right. Yeah. So now, you know, I'm sure there's somebody who's listening and thinking, all the things you said. Well, I mean, but the Gorn is injured and who knows how long they've been there. And so maybe by this point, all of that's just kind of been beaten out of them. And I guess we can go with that as we just give it to you, right? We'll let you have.
It is possible. Yes.
It's not
in reality, it would be possible, right?
But I think that in some ways, that's another tip of the hand almost that there's something else going on here. And it's one of the places where when I talk about the episode was too easy for Ortegas, it just makes it way too easy that they're really every threat that the Gorn present for Ortegas is taken away almost at the snap of a finger. And that's that again, that's the thing. If you want this character to move from a place of being terrified of the Gorn, of hating them, of feeling like they'd never be able to forgive them. I mean, it's like Kirk with Klingons, right? You know, I've never been able to forgive them for the death of my boy. What happens in that whole movie, right? He sees a Klingon as a father to a daughter. He sees that daughter lose her father. He comes face to face with his own prejudice and what it almost cost him and how that same prejudice is about to destroy the Federation and the Klingons together. All of that is such compelling stuff. And that's the way that you bring a character from being the place that Ortegas is to being, you know, you need that kind of story to happen where there's a real journey to happen. And it doesn't happen here. And so in the idea of seeking understanding, that part is actually kind of like boring and lazy to me, too, because it's so easy for them to come to an understanding. I mean, the moment she's like, we're just two girls at a sleepover, we could braid each other's hair. It's like, okay.
Yeah, guest giant slumber party, right?
Yeah, whatever.
We can braid each other's hair. I want to see the Gorn's hair.
Yeah, yeah, that would be
although
cool.
It'd be hard to braid Ortegas' hair as well.
Well, I mean, that's what she said. She's like, if I had any, you know, so. Well, on top of that, I want to bring up this to you. Like, I understand that what they're trying to do is the storyline for the fact that Uhura and Ortegas are so close, right?
Right, right.
What? Yeah. But I'm sorry. Uhura is not a scientist. She's a linguist. And for her to bring up this plan that Spock doesn't come up with made zero sense.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, this is like Chapel being the archaeologist and
yes,
earlier
it's
in
like,
the season, right?
This show, in its desire to tell stories for characters, can't be consistent within itself. And in its desire to make characters do things, they only happen because of the plot. And that is terrible writing. Things should not happen to characters because the plot tells you it should happen. It should be organic to the characters so that whatever you're writing feels organic to the story.
Mm-hmm. Well, I could say the evolution of Uhura in, since you believe this is another timeline, the evolution of Uhura here could be that she does have this ability to see things in scientific ways and come up with ideas like this, but it doesn't jive with the Uhura that we know from the original series. Now, of course, that's because that show was written in the 1960s and they weren't going to give a black woman on the ship that kind of authority on television at the time because of the culture of the country at the time, which, you know, that's the real world reason probably why we don't see that. If we were to see the original series written later on into the 90s or certainly into the 2000s, Uhura's character would have had more to do, right?
I mean, bringing up Star Trek VI, Uhura is the one who's like, the thing's got to have a tailpipe, right? So it's not like, again, I think one of the things that being consistent within itself, when it comes to communication stuff, Uhura is on top of her game in this series, and it's that part's well written. And maybe I'm wrong, but has it ever been shown that Uhura is really this scientifically minded in this way? When you think about the immense, I mean, this is Spock level science, not just everyday science.
Yeah, maybe Peli is rubbing off on her, and she's learning some things from Pelia. So. And it could be here, too, that Spock is not as open to possibilities that don't jive with where he thinks the science should go at this point. But, yeah, I don't know. That didn't it didn't stand out to me as much, but I totally get what you're saying, that it's not really her thing. I thought that Chapel being an archaeologist was a little bit more off the wall than Uhura coming up with solution here. You know, you could see Uhura was feeling pressure, especially from number one, but even from Pike and the rest of the crew in the situation that they're in, needing to, of course, deliver some vaccines to Captain Decker, the Constellation. You've got to put a ticking clock on all this stuff, of course, but she was feeling pressure. And because of her friendship with Ortegas, she had incentive to go beyond her communication duties and like try to find solutions to things. So I don't know. I'll let them have that. So, okay, let's talk about the Metrons, because when the Metrons showed up,
do we have to?
Yeah. Well, I think we do have to here because
of course we do. You're right.
That's the point. That's the point here where there are two things with not only Strange New Worlds, but Discovery was doing it as well, where the writers of Star Trek in the modern series, they always want to tie back in to past Star Trek, almost in a way of saying, hey, look, we know about Star Trek. You know, we looked something up on Memory Alpha. And here it makes a little bit more sense because this is a TOS prequel. And so if you bring in alien races or characters from the original series and show them a little bit earlier, there's a bit more of a natural connection there. And here with the Gorn, because the Metrons show up in Arena and they stage the entire situation in Arena, it makes sense to bring them in here. But it doesn't feel necessary. Like, this episode would have worked perfectly fine and probably better if the Metrons had never shown up and the Enterprise still comes, rescues Ortegas, La'an kills the Gorn, and they go back to the ship, and then they have to deal with the aftermath of that. But because the Metrons step in and say, hey, this was all just a big test that we staged because, you know, we're not sure if two enemies would kill each other or get along, it felt like a very, very strained effort to try to
yes.
justify the portrayal of the Gorn throughout Strange New Worlds
yep.
and try to create a bridge to Arena to say, hey, you know, yeah, we're aware that what we're doing
right.
doesn't match up with what comes later. And why is it a one later? Well, it's because the Metrons are doing a series of tests and they didn't get enough information this time. So they're going to have to do it again later.
Yeah, this is only a test. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming. I agree with you. I think that this is another place where this is a completely gimmick-filled episode in that sense. Like, the Metrons become a gimmick at the end. And the thing that really, I don't really care that they utilize the Metrons, because again, this show is not canon. So, in the sense of it being in the Prime universe, it's its own canon. And so if that's the way you want to play this, I'm totally cool with that. The thing that really frustrates me about the Metrons is their logic makes zero sense. The fact that they have chosen Ortegas, a person who has zero interest in being somebody who's converted to someone that could ever trust a Gorn and has every reason to never, ever, ever trust a Gorn, it makes zero sense then that the Metrons is like, oh, we need further study just because of La'an's actions. Now, we'll get to La'an's actions in a second because that makes zero sense too. But the Metrons have legitimately proved by this test that human beings who hate the Gorn can come to see the Gorn completely differently if the right situation is in place. Zero writing sense that they would say, oh, we need further testing. Two, this episode, having La'an kill the Gorn when it's clearly no danger to Erica. And if you're just reading the situation, Erica has just set the whole atmosphere on fire, and you find a Gorn and Erica hiding in a shield bunker, and they emerge from that shield bunker. They were obviously there together. La'an being so incredibly stupid to just have her people to shoot this Gorn. Again, it makes zero sense. The writing here is just terrible, Chris, because it's dictated by plot, not by like thought process of the characters. And La'an is a much smarter character than this. We have proved that over and over again in this show.
Right. The only thing I can see for La'an is that because of her long experience with the Gorn, she has this instinct that if she sees a Gorn, she shoots. It's just like a reflex. That's the only thing I can see, because otherwise, you know, if you're reading the room, you can see what's actually going on.
Yeah.
And you should at least not shoot until you know what's going on.
You so have again, five people there who have guns on her. So you know, if you need to protect Erica, you absolutely have the case. But I mean, as they're crawling out, you're watching it happen. That Gorn is not reaching for Erica Ortegas. They're not doing anything aggressive to Erica Ortegas. And obviously, if they wanted Erica Ortegas dead, she'd already be dead.
She'd already be dead, right? Yeah. So, but yeah, like you said, it's dictated by the plot. The end game of the story was that Ortegas becomes close to a Gorn, and then the Gorn is killed in front of her, and that affects her.
Gorn loving had me a blast. Friendship with a Gorn happened so fast. I braided her hair. Wasn't it great? We had barbecue at 8. I mean, it's just like...
That's a pit creature barbecue, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but beside your song there, if people could just see the dance that went along with the song, I mean, that's the whole package.
It's a good thing we do not do video, Chris. Nobody needed to see that.
Oh, my goodness. That was some dance. All right. All right. Okay. So anyway, that's where we are with that and with the Metrons. So I don't think we'll see the Metrons again in Strange New Worlds. I think the next time we see the Metrons will be in Arena. And then we have to ask, why doesn't anybody have any memory of what happened? Because this is something that is said at the end of the episode. I had to go back and catch it again just to be sure that I'm clear. Because when I watched this episode the first time, I thought that the Metron explained that you won't remember anything that happened here. But that's actually not what the Metron says. The Metron says, you are not ready to meet us. You won't remember me. And perhaps someday we may need to reset your perception of the Gorn as well, which means we're going to do Arena later. And then Ortegas asks, what will I remember? And the Metron says, what you experienced, it was genuine. You may keep it. So at least Ortegas remembers everything that happened.
Well, yeah. And that the Gorn aren't monsters then, right?
Yeah, exactly. And she would put this in her log at least, and probably she would brief Pike on what happened and everything. Now, what's not clear from what the Metron says is whether La'an and the others in the landing party or anyone on the ship would remember what happened, particularly La'an and the others on the planet. Maybe their memories are erased and Ortegas's isn't. That isn't really clear. But yeah, it just, for me, the Metron arrival spoiled an episode that I personally was actually watching and enjoying all the way through until that moment where I felt like, okay, so none of this really matters in the big picture of Star Trek or the Federation Gorn relationship or anything like that.
It just reminds me of in Doctor Who when River's like, spoilers. And that's exactly what the Metrons were in this episode. Spoilers.
Yeah. All right. Well, as a last topic, because of what I just said, this is something I was thinking about, and I'm curious what you think. The story feels odd as the penultimate episode of the season. They've got one to go, and the next to last episode is a really slow story focused on one character, but does have Gorn in it, and it does present the Gorn in a way that differs from what we've seen up to this point. So, do you think there's any chance that this new impression of the Gorn is being used as a setup for some aspect of the finale, given that we've got the Vesda and Batel's inner Gorn still hanging out there?
I mean, aren't you glad this season's almost over?
It's almost Gorn.
Yeah. It's interesting that you asked that question because I honestly hadn't really thought about the fact that the season's almost over, and it feels like we've done so little to set up an interesting finale, right?
Mm-hmm. Because the last thing that was something that felt like a setup was the computer glitch when the Vesda gets into the computer system. And that was weeks and weeks and weeks ago, and it's never been touched on again.
Exactly. I think this might be one of the worst written seasons of television that I've seen in the sense of pacing and like really
pacing,
really building anything interesting story-wise, right? You know, again, like first and second seasons, I think were much better at kind of building towards the end and getting to an interesting finale.
Yeah.
And this is just not doing that in any way, shape, or form, which is so strange because even though I didn't love all of season two, there were some real clunkers in there for me. By the time you got to the end with the big showdown, you know, with the Gorn there, that was, I mean, you had us on the edge of our seats. We were waiting for it to come back. You know, I was looking forward to this show coming back. And then this season has had storylines that it's set up, but it's never paid off. And again, we've never brought back the the storylines from season one that we had planted out there.
Yeah,
we've never pulled
on
those
threads. I'm still waiting for Cybok to come back.
Yes, exactly. And so I am at a loss to understand what the writers of this series are trying to do. And I know people have been frustrated me listening to this show because of my complaints about it. But this is where being constructively critical, if you're going to leave breadcrumbs for us to follow, you need to follow up on them because you're making a promise to us as the viewer that these things are important. And then when you don't pay them off and we have to wait years between seasons, it makes it even more difficult than when they continue not to pay off. And that's not my fault as a viewer. That's your fault as the writer for not actually paying off the things that you're putting in your own show. And the way that this show is set up is that it is not like the original series, and it's not like TNG. It is a much more continuous show, even though most of the episodes can be kind of watched in and of themselves if you wanted to, but there's continuing threads. It's a lot more like Enterprise in that sense, right? Especially the first couple of seasons.
Yeah, the first couple of seasons, yeah.
And even there, you know, they were much better at remembering what they had written and then following up on those storylines in those first two seasons. And so I really am glad that you brought this up because it is a major flaw in this season that we're at the season finale next week. And I'm like, all right, well, I've seen some pictures and it looks like we're going to deal with the Vesda and go back to that time planet again. So that's weird. But I have no ideas. And like, I don't feel any reason as to why we would go back there, you know? And like, again, even with the Batel thing, we haven't really done a ton with her as a character to make this like. So, yes, well, there's just a lot that's really missing for this season.
Yeah, I think a key is that the finale is coming up in 2 days as we record this. And I haven't looked at images like you have. I don't look at the images ahead of time.
I didn't do it on purpose. I was on, you know, Facebook today and accidentally ran across them. So
I haven't looked at images and I have no idea what to expect in the finale. Now, I can make some guesses of what I think is going to happen without even looking at images. I think that it's going to focus on the Vesda because they've never said anything after the Vesda got into the computer system. And that little glitch was an obvious setup for something to come. And not like a lot of their obvious setups where, like you said, they never, ever return to them again. This one seemed important, like, okay, we're going to set up our finale and then we're going to do some other stuff. And then at the end of the season, we'll touch on this again. And I figure it's going to have something to do with the Gorn as well because of Batel's reaction to Gamble when he was possessed by the Vesda. And you mentioned that apparently they're going to go back to the time planet. My guess will be that the Vesda that's trapped in the computer wants to get back to that planet because he's going to try to free all the other prisoners. And because he's in the computer, he can hijack the navigation and take the Enterprise back to the planet. That's my guess, that that will be the basic plot of the finale. And then how it's resolved, I'm not sure, other than I know the Enterprise will not be destroyed. Pike won't die. Number One won't die. M'Benga won't die. Uhura won't die. Spock won't die. Chapel won't die. I don't think that the beluga whales and cetacean ops are going to die. I think they'll be all right.
I'm so glad they're safe.
So, you know, it's always pretty low stakes because you know that everyone's going to be okay in the end. Except maybe Batel. You know, Batel's the character that they certainly could kill off. But I don't know that they would do that because if they were going to do it, I feel like they would have done it by now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I was just thinking, like, well, why, like, as writers, if you are trying to set up something, why would this episode be the next to last episode dealing with the Gorn in this way? when I know that the Vesda must be the focus of the finale just based on what happened earlier in the season. But the fact that I don't feel any momentum building towards something as the finale is very noticeable and very telling for how the season has unfolded.
Being lulled into a false sense of security that same evening. This episode has completely lulled me into a false sense of security in the sense of, like, I am completely bored. This episode I found to do nothing with exactly what you said. We're building nothing towards the season finale, and I would love, I mean, feel free, come and tell me how I'm wrong, but where are we actually building a cohesive story when we think about the idea of the Gorn, the Vesda, the Q that are somehow involved in all of this, and all of this stuff, the Metrons now have shown up, like how is this all a cohesive story for our characters, and especially since unless Batel is going to be some, you know, in the Metron, so we're going to change your perception of the Gorn, that we're going to bring the Gorn into alignment with what they were in the original series, kind of as we knew them, and Batel is the way to do that, because somehow maybe the Q were responsible for actually messing up the Gorn or something. I don't know, but, like, again, I am pulling at every single straw out of my butt to try and figure out how this is all going to play. Right?
Hold on, Matthew. Hold on. Why do you have straws in your butt?
No. You know what I'm saying. Like, that's the insanity of it. It makes zero sense as to how that this plays. Insane. Right? And that's a frustrating thing.
Yeah.
When you're watching a season of television, especially these days when we are so much more used to our seasons of television having nice through lines so that by the time you get to an end of the season, it's kind of a resolution of whatever that major storyline has been. And here, you know, your guess is good as mine. I just gave you some guesses that probably will mean nothing, but I still have no idea what they're going to do.
Well, I'll tell you, yesterday, just to refresh my memory mainly about the Metrons, I rewatched Arena, which means, you know, I saw Batel yesterday. That's Batel in Arena. I mean, they're both captains, right? It's 6 years later.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. Maybe. Kirk didn't know that because, you know, then this version of Kirk would sleep with her, so.
That's true. All right. Well, what's your rating?
I'm really sad to say this because, you know, again, what I have asked for is what they did last week where they took the characters from Strange New Worlds and especially the ones that were specific to Strange New Worlds and they had written storylines for them. Here, they try to do the same thing with Ortegas, but I think it's just an absolute fail. And if somebody had never seen any Star Trek before, maybe this episode works because they don't know every single plot point that's coming.
Sure.
Yeah, but if you've seen Star Trek, which, in all honesty, the numbers on Strange New Worlds are not good enough for this not to be the case that almost 99% of the people that are watching this are Star Trek fans and have watched every single moment of Star Trek. This is a uninspiring story. It's uninspired story-wise. It's uninspired character-wise. It's uninspired even in its thought process when inside the episode. It's logically inconsistent. It makes zero sense on multiple fronts, really. And that's not good storytelling. And so in all honesty, I am going to give this episode 2 out of 10 creepy little moon spider thingies, moon spider lizards, because this episode is honestly, when we talk about the creative barrel, this is it. You've mined every single other episode of Star Trek, you threw it into a blender and this is what came. I mean, this episode feels like it was written by AI in that sense. Like you gave it, like you fed AI Arena, you fed it Enemy Mine, you fed it, you know, Darmok and Dawn. And then the Gorn episodes from this season, and that's this is what popped out.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
Actually, but I think AI totally, might have done a better job.
I totally understand what you're saying. And there's one episode you didn't mention that also is part of this. In the Galileo 7, how do they get rescued? Spock ejects the fuel and sets it on fire.
He sets it on fire.
To create a flare.
Yes.
So the Enterprise can spot them.
Oh, Chris, you just made it worse. Okay. Yeah. This is a 1 out of 10 then. Yeah. You just lost another star because you just, wow, you shouldn't have said that and it would have been better. So.
And the thing is, that was so obvious that the first time I'm watching it, when she comes up with the idea of setting the atmosphere on fire to create a flare, I'm like, okay, so that's how Spock gets the idea in the Galileo 7. He remembers Terrarium and what Erica did, and then he's going to try the same thing. Like, that's sort of like the writing logic behind it, of trying to write
things. No, you're right.
Like, you know, like when we talked about the Gorma, is that its name, the creature from a few episodes ago, where they're kind of implying that this is how Spock gets the idea in Star Trek 4 that it could be whale song, right? It's like some aquatic, so you know.
Please stop reminding me, Chris. You're reminding me of all the things in this season that just don't work.
All right. Okay, well, with everything we've said, I'm still, as you said at the beginning, I do applaud them for trying to do something with Ortegas to give her character a story and to actually, and this is, I guess, within the context of the modern Star Trek series, maybe with the exception of Picard season 2, where they really do dig into what's going on inside Picard's mind based on his family history. I'm glad to see them actually follow up with some traumatic event for a character in some kind of detail and not just be like, well, that happened to them, but they're okay now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I am happy to see that they did that. And given everything else that we've gotten, as I said up front, I was enjoying watching the episode because it just felt like a Star Trek episode. It didn't feel like a great Star Trek episode, but it felt like a typical Star Trek episode.
Sure.
Going back certainly in the TNG era of Star Trek. And it was kind of refreshing for me to see that. And so even though everything was very familiar and it was filled with Star Trek tropes and it was easy to see where everything was going and the challenge for Ortegas to survive was very easy, perhaps in part because the Metrons were making sure that nothing happened to them because they just wanted to see if these two girls could become friends.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, braid each other's hair.
So. You know, that's the story that they wanted to tell. And I think your point of, if you're writing this stuff, if you're writing for Star, I think Star Trek is an extremely difficult franchise to write for because of the enormous back catalog and how many decades. You know, we're coming up, we're heading into the 60th year now, right? So it's very, very difficult. And I think if you're going to write for it, you do need to remember that your viewers know what came before. Most of your viewers have seen all of Star Trek and they know everything that came before. And so you have to work extra hard to create stories that are really going to engage your audience.
Yeah.
You can't just have the idea of, hey, on this other show, I saw this premise. Why don't we just do that here? It'll be great, right? It might work. You know, this episode would work a lot better if you take it out of context and you just watch it on its own without any of the baggage of Star Trek.
But
with
at that point, too, it's like, you know, it's almost like the con thing in Into Darkness. Like, it doesn't work unless you really know Star Trek 2. But then it doesn't work really well if you know Star Trek 2. And so the you know, the Metrons, they they don't really necessarily work great if you don't know Arena, and they don't work great if you do know Arena. And so you just...
I think they work better if you don't know Arena.
Yeah. Yeah. So...
All right. Well, I'm going to give this one 5 paper airplanes.
Nice. Is that out of like 100?
In this case, it's out of 10.
Okay. Okay.
I would say typically my ratings are out of 10, but sometimes they're just completely abstract. But yeah. All right, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on Terrarium. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the easiest way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in, so that I know that you're actually a listener to the podcast and not just someone who was suggested the group by Facebook and has no idea what we're talking about. You can also send us email if you'd like. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose Saddle Up, and that'll come back to Matthew and me by email. And you can also find us in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew... When you're not trying to shake the feeling that you're being watched, where can people find you?
Summer Mission had me a blast. Summer Mission, it happened so fast. Summer Mission, Gorn is a friend. Sorry. Anyway, you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. Tell me how much you love my singing and how much you want that completed song. You can also find me here on the network outside of all the great Star Trek talk that Chris and I do. We can't wait to get back to our rewatches, but find me in the 602 Club, talking about all the franchises outside of Star Trek that we love. Also over on the Nerd Party Network, a couple shows. One is called Owl Post. Talked about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, as well as talking about Star Wars on Aggressive Negotiations with the great John Mills. But Chris, when you're not trying to find my latest hit, Summer Mission, where can people find you?
You mean it's not on Spotify? It's not on Apple Music? It should be
not
easy
yet.
To find.
I'm actually hoping that I can get Christina Chong to want to record it with me. And so that would be great. So.
Yeah, I can just see that. Yeah. Summer Mission by Matthew Rushing featuring Christina Chong.
Oh, man. It sounds like a match made in heaven, honestly.
Yeah. But I hope it includes the music video because I know there's going to be a great dance number in there.
Well, she'll do all the dancing. Because nobody wants that from me.
All right. Well, as you mentioned, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing all those shows with you, also in the back catalog in many episodes of many shows. And you can find me everywhere in social media. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. Blue Sky is where I'm most active, but you can send me a message wherever you are. And if you'd like to help us keep this show and everything we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help to find out how to get involved, how to help us out, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your support. So thank you to everyone who is supporting us now. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to next week. One last ride in the saddle for this season as we seek out some new life and new civilizations.
Well, Chris, I think it's time to saddle up and hit it.
Three, two, one, record.
Recording.
Erica's crash landing pants.
Yes. Also, don't get me started on Erica MacGyver.
Oh, that's going to be a spinoff.
MacGruber!
I loved those, yeah.
Yeah. Ortegas! I can fix anything no matter what it is. Ortegas! Give me a tricorder and I can turn it into a communications device. Ortegas!
Oh, man. That's going to be the next hit show for sure.
might be more interesting.
You know how it is on TV? Some character, you know, like Friends, Joey gets a spinoff show. This one's going to be Ortegas.
Yeah,
Ortegas MacGyver.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. All right. I guess it'd be Erica MacGyver, right?
Erica MacGyver Ortegas. Yeah. She's the descendant. You just didn't know. So.
All right. Okay, here we go.